This week on What's Going On with Earl Ingram, we're talking about hope, opportunity, and community. WellPoint is changing lives by helping foster kids find safe housing, stable jobs, and the resources they need to thrive. They're not just providing shelter, they're building futures. And for children who face unimaginable challenges, WellPoint is making sure mental health care is a priority. Join the conversation and learn how you can support these efforts, because every child deserves a safe place and a bright future. Don't miss it, airing this week on all streaming platforms. Follow us on civicmedia.us or wherever you follow your podcast. Please like and subscribe as well. To What's Going On with Earl Ingram. I am, you know, always excited to bring interesting topics to you, the listening audience, and today is no different. I've had the pleasure of having some conversation with some great young people who are doing extraordinary things with their lives, who clearly have not allowed adversity to prevent them from seeing life through the proper lens. And I'm so excited to begin a conversation and a dialogue that I think should reach people from across this nation. It clearly is a topic long overdue, and I'm so excited to welcome a group of young people that I met at WellPoint in, here in the city of Milwaukee. And, you know, I'm a treatment foster parent. For those of you who don't know, my wife and I know the value and importance of doing something to help make somebody else's life better. And I will tell you, in the long run, it's not just about you making somebody else's life better. It's about the impact that they have on your life. So having said that, I want to welcome Miss Christine Woods, who is who works for WellPoint, and three young people that I'm very much impressed with, who are going to be doing extraordinary things in their lives. Mr. Angel Shelton, Deontay Shelton, and Johnny Spengola. Good morning to all of you. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right.
We're doing good today.
All right, so let's start with Miss Christine Woods. Miss Christine Woods, tell us a little bit about you and you know, how you got involved with these young people and your role in all of this.
Okay, well, I'm Christine Woods. I've been working for WellPoint Care Network for 16 years now. I've been doing case management and actually doing youth work for over 35 years now. I'm also the advisor for the YAC, which is the Youth Advisory Council here at WellPoint. And what we do is we advocate for young people in care and out of care, out of the foster care system. And I'm just so proud of the young people that I work with. And I just love this kind of work. I have a passion for this. And I just like to hear young people give their stories, advocate for other young people like themselves, and just be a positive role model to others. So that's my story. That's my journey.
So what is WellPoint for those who don't know?
So WellPoint is actually, it's like an entity of child welfare. So what we do is, for my program, which is youth transitioning to adulthood, we work with youth ages 18 to 23 years of age who aged out of the system. And so we work with them around our five pillars, which is housing, education, employment, caring connections, and mental health. And in those five pillars, we try to make sure that our young people have proper housing, they have their educational needs met, they also be able to work on their mental health, seeing a therapist if that's somebody that they want to talk to, and also just making sure that they are aware of other resources in the community. That's the caring connections piece. So that way, once they are no longer eligible for our program, when they turn 23, they have other resources in Milwaukee county that they can utilize.
You know, Ms. Woods, the reason that I know this is a can't miss podcast series that we're going to be doing, it certainly can't be all taken care of or discussed in one podcast. We're going to be doing several. You know, people don't think about what happens to young people who have been in foster care because it doesn't come up on the radar. And so when you don't know people, it's so very easy for people to judge others. And when I met these young people, I was just so excited about, you know, the things that they've been able to overcome thus far in their lives. And clearly they didn't do it alone. But the program that you are talking about certainly is a life-changing program, and without question needs to happen in more places, not just in this city of Milwaukee, but across the state and across nations.
I agree.
Well, let's have at it. Let's begin by saying good morning to Mr. Angel Shelton. Good morning to you. How are you, man? Miss Angel Shelton. I'm sorry. How are you, young lady?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah. Can you speak up a little more?
Sorry. I'm good. How are you?
All right. All right. You know, tell us a little bit about Angel Shelton.
I am 20 years old. I am a nursing student at MATC. I currently work for Advocate Aurora West Allis Hospital. I'm a nursing assistant. My goals and my passion in life is to be able to take care of people, but not only take care of people, to become an advocate to the little me, basically, because there's a little me out there that needs change and needs support and needs help and guidance.
So tell us a little bit about your journey.
Well, I would say my journey kind of started off when I was 11. I dealt with some trauma. My mom worked a lot, and her family weren't pretty good people at all. And then my dad's side of the family, they weren't like around and things like that, because my dad had been in prison since I was 2. So it's kind of hard for him to be around, and he's in prison. That kind of led to a factor where my mom only had people in her family to lean on and not other people around. Her family, again, like I said, were not good people. Some things happened within the household, and it took for them to remove me when I was like 15. I tried to take my life. Like, I was working one day after work. I just impulsively feel like I couldn't do it no more because I was dealing with so much, and I feel like nobody heard me or nobody seeing me. And I feel like at a point, like, I wasn't here anymore. So I tried to take my life, and from there I went into a mental health hospital. And then from there, they started contacting my dad's side of the family, which was my grandma and my auntie. And then my grandma and my auntie kind of asked the DCF worker to not put me into the services, but to bring me to them. And I stayed with my auntie and my grandma for 2 years. And then after that, my journey kind of started where I was kind of house hopping after that two-year point, because like my grandma was going through her health issues. And then also like my dad and my grandma was kind of having issues between their selves and things like that. And I was also growing as a teen, and my grandma was kind of looking at me like I was a child in a sense, which now that I get older, I see like she wanted to protect me from the outside world, but also she was doing it in the wrong manner. And then also like she also had negative behaviors that she had when my dad was growing up that she kind of carried, and I couldn't take on her mental health behavior, so I had to leave, and that's when group home started to come in.
Let's go to Deontay Shelton. Good morning to you, Deontay. How you doing?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing all right.
All right. So are you an Angel related?
No, it's just the last name, but you can. We are like family, so yeah, that's my cousin.
So tell us a little bit about Deontay Shelton.
So my journey started when I was three. I was never in my biological mother's care. I was with this lady that I still call mom to this day. She had me since I was three once again. We moved to Milwaukee when I was four after my grandma had passed. Then I never had contact with my biological dad or my biological mother. As over the years started, you know, a kid, you know, starts to learn things and just starts acting out. I became that type of kid that would just do stuff without thinking. I was a kid, I was very impulsive. And my mother, she was a very hard disciplinarian. I had other siblings too, and they had to experience that because they were older and I was the youngest kid. So they understand how she can kind of turn up on people sometimes. As I got older, she contacted my dad because she was trying to figure out why I was acting the way that I was. Why was I so angry and so frustrated with life? So I got contact with my dad, and that didn't really work out. And they were kind of bashing each other because my dad was like, she's not your real mom. And my mom was like, well, I took care of you, and who is he to say that? So it sparked a disconnect between families to where I had to feel like I had to pick a side, and nobody told me you can love both without feeling any type of way. I cut contact with my dad because he disrespected my mom, and I was going through middle school at the time, and I was still getting in trouble for just little things. It wasn't big things, but you know, as you keep getting in trouble, whoopings turn into slaps, turn into physical, turn into like beatings almost. And my mom, she was very angry because she had lost her mother too. And she was a single mom and her children were grown and nobody was helping her. So 14 years old, she kicked me out the house. She wanted me to live with my dad, but I didn't. Instead, my biological sister took me. I lived with my sister for 1 year, transitioning into my freshman year of high school. It didn't work out. It wasn't abusive or anything. Me and my sister didn't just see eye to eye. And I was having problems with her boyfriend. And my first step into the actual system was at the end of May 2023, I believe. I came into this foster home that I just recently left. It was very abusive. They were very toxic within one another, and it was a lot of people in the house. So it's like everybody's looking for attention, and I'm the outsider, so they're always gonna cast me out. They disrespected me in many ways, but I was advocating for myself, telling me. And then that's when I met Miss Christina, and she introduced me to Yak and Miss Christine and Angel and Johnny. And this new family that I have built, and it's been a life changer.
Deontay, so, how old are you?
I am 16, sir.
Oh, you're 16?
Yes.
Wow. So, let me see. So, early on, with this first foster parent, she had your sibling as well?
No, I was just the only person in foster care.
Okay.
In my perspective. But there was another kid with me. He didn't get the same treatment as I did. So it took me to have an altercation with one of her family members, and they put their hands on me. So I had to move out of that house. And I'm in a better, safe environment. And it feels really weird because when a kid only knows fight or flight mode or chaos, conflict, and confusion, they sort of don't know how to react when it's peaceful and they don't have to look over their shoulder.
So you're 16 years old. You're still in high school.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing in school?
I would say I'm doing amazing in school. I just passed two of my AP classes. I passed the honors class. 3-point GPA.
Oh.
I feel like
you know, man, if I didn't know any better, or those listening didn't know any better, you sound like a young man who clearly has his head screwed on straight. You don't sound like somebody who's going through difficult times. You're clearly making the transition, and that's part of what we want to express to those who will be listening to this podcast. Let's move on to Mr. Johnny Spingola. Good morning to you, young man. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
All right, man. Tell us a little bit about Johnny Spingola.
Well, I'm 21 now. I'll be 22 next month, September 19th. And I just moved downtown, like, this month.
On your own?
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
But before, you know, I was kind of like house jumping because like things get tough sometimes, you know? But no, I'm stable now. And I also sell art too.
You're stable now. Tell us a little bit about your story.
So basically, you know, with me, like, I never really had a relationship with my dad because he just was an absent parent pretty much. And he had a lot of kids, so I have like 10 siblings, and my mom is like, she's struggled with addiction throughout her life, with like powder and stuff, and she's also bipolar, so she's got like a lot of problems, and you know, with me, like, we never had a good relationship, so I stayed with my grandparents until, like, you know, my grandma had passed, and then I still have like one set of grandparents now, but you know, they live with my aunt and stuff, and like that side of this family too is also just a little funky, you know. Like, I have a good relationship with my grandma and my grandpa on my mom's side of the family, but I don't really talk to any other family. And I was in like Rogers, which is a mental health hospital, and that was in 2017 because like trauma was just getting to me, and like, you know, I wasn't coping well with like my living situation because like there was just a lot of abuse in the household, and like it was just compressing, you know, on my life. And so I started going to Rogers in 2017, and then pretty much like the next year, 2018, I was in the foster care system because my mom had just like, she didn't care enough to like try anymore. So she was just done. And like, I was in like a lot of different group homes, but I started at one called Ujima, and I met this guy named Mr. Reed, and he like was very inspirational because he had went through a lot of the same stuff I did. And, you know, he turned that into like a legacy for other people, and he turned it into a good thing, like turned all the pain and all that like trauma into like help for youth and advocation for other people going through the same stuff. And like, he was the type to, you know, buy you new shoes and buy you new clothes and just taught me that you can go through a lot of stuff, but it doesn't have to make you a bad person. And you can be the light for other people who are going through the same storm. You know what I'm saying? And then like, I moved a lot throughout the system. So I was probably in 10 different group homes, but within all of those placements, I did learn something from each one. And I like had made connections with a lot of people, and I am grateful for like all the relationships that I've been able to make, including Miss Christine and, you know, just other people throughout the way.
Do any of you guys still have connections with your siblings, your sisters and your brothers?
I do.
Who?
I do.
Johnny and Angel. And you?
Yeah. Well, so tell us a little bit about how important it is to still be connected to your family.
I believe it's very important because, like, I mean, if they treat you right, like obviously you don't want to just hold on to a connection because it's just like, oh, that's your family. But if you have a good relationship with your siblings, like, don't, like, I would say hold on to it because that's your family, you know. But also, this is family too, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Blood doesn't mean anything for real. But if the relationship is good for you, keep it, you know.
Miss Angel?
Sorry. I talk to my siblings actually every day. Actually, all of us is in college, so this is the most time that we kind of lean on each other. So I find it like really important that if you can build that connection with your siblings, do so, or at least try, and don't let like bad blood come between y'all, because at the end of the day, your siblings are all you got, really.
Listen, you said you're in college. How were you able to overcome the difficulties that were presented to you at a very young age? Who do you attribute that strength to?
God and resilience. I would say like everything that I got through and everything that I've got through from the grace of God. Just holding my head high and keeping resilience through it all is how I pushed through it. And then having the support around me, the people that was able to push me when I had no pushing, like Miss Christine or the case manager that I had in the past with my IL worker, her name was Miss Marla, or my case manager. She still check on me to this day, or like this full social worker that I had the outside support that weren't family, kept me going. And then also, again, like those prayers, those nights where I had to get on my knees and I had to pray and I had to beg God to just give me the strength to just keep going.
You know, so did one of the foster parents or group homes that you were in get you connected to a higher power, or did you do that on your own? And at what stage in your life?
I would say it's always been since just growing up. Like my family is from Arkansas, so like they kind of growing up, they kind of put upon us like, you know, you pray, you go to church, regardless of what they had going on, and kind of people that they were, they always took us to church and made sure, like, we know who God is, or we know to believe in something and to believe that somebody pushed us here to do something and that you have the strength to keep going, just ask for it.
So any of you can answer this question. The Youth Advisory Council, what is that and why are you a part of it?
Stands for, you already said it, the Youth Advisory Council, but yeah, it's like people who are in foster care, like personally are able to come here at Well Point, and then, you know, we have our meetings every second Thursday of the month where we talk about like topics, you know, relating to, you know, problems that we faced and problems that are still relevant to current foster youth, what can be done to fix that, and then also like just community outreach program, like community outreach events too. Like sometimes there's like the back to school stuff. So we're giving out backpacks and we have like, you know, items for people who need them for their youth, you know what I'm saying? And then there's just like more access to other things like the YTA and, you know, just like, and then like, if you wanna talk more about how the state does stuff at the youth and stuff.
Yeah, so as YAC, we are here to create a change within the foster care community. We are here to advocate for the youth that can't advocate for themselves. We are here to build a voice for youth that can't build for themselves. We are here to be the eyes that can't see. We go down to Madison, I want to say once a year, and we go speak and we try to get funding for independent living and foster care youth. So as we kind of come together and we kind of build support for other foster care kids.
You know, Deontay, you're the youngest of the bunch. Your thoughts?
Well, I decided to join it because they have brought me a lot of great opportunities to let my voice be heard. And it feels very, very nice to be an advocate for those people who are dealing with the same things that we had to go through or that feel alone. So I feel like we're here to let people know, to let these young kids, because young kids are the light of the future. So it's critical and crucial to make sure that we let these kids be prepared about the outside world and what they have to go through, to let them know that they're not alone. They can do this. We're just basically like a safe haven to those kids.
You know, I want to present something to you guys, because I know you guys are strong and well and think through things very well. There's a constant conversation in our community about what is wrong with young people. And so my generation and others continue to say, what is wrong with young people? It is true that there's a segment of the population of young people who are really doing some heinous things. They're wayward. They have access to guns. They're dealing drugs. They're stealing cars. They're doing all manner of horrific things. And yet our community keeps asking the question, what is wrong with young people? What do we need to do to fix it? Any of you, if you hear that question, what is wrong with young people, and it's proposed to you, what would you say to those who are asking that question?
I would say my response would be, well, the reason why people ask that question is because they don't understand why young people act the way they do, and their answer is simply because there's no guidance. If you adults don't guide these kids and groom these kids to let them be what you want them to be, or have them have the best outcomes in life, that's the reason why young people act the way that they do, because they're seeing this from the people that they look up to and from the environment that they're in. So if these kids have guidance, love, nurturing, and support, then y'all probably wouldn't be asking that question.
Johnny?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that statement, because it's what the kids have exposure to. Like, why did the kids have exposure to guns in the first place? Why did the kids have exposure to drugs and drug dealers in the first place? Probably because the people who are older and supervising them also have that connection and are kind of maybe forcing that lifestyle upon the children and youth today and making them believe that that's pretty much the only lifestyle that you can benefit off of and live off of and, work with, even though there's millions of other choices that could be made. But certain people just don't have the people around them telling them that, or showing them, or guiding them, like you said, to better ways to cope. Even with all the trauma, there are so many things you can do with that. You need to be able to turn pain into something else and not resort to violence. But mind you, that again, how are the kids getting these things? It's clearly the people around them are the problem, and not structured, not giving them the love and attention they deserve. And then also, again, enforcing false beliefs and narratives into their mind on how you should be in this world,
So Angel, I often hear people saying that children shouldn't be taken away from their parents. It's not right. They shouldn't take children away from their parents. And I've always said that children don't get to pick their parents. And so if children are in a condition or a situation that leads them into the kinds of things that Johnny and Deontay were talking about, being exposed to these horrific things that lead them down a horrible path at very young ages. What is your thought about the fact that, you know, it comes to a point in time where young people are exposed to things and don't get a fair opportunity to grow up in a nurturing environment?
Yeah, so actually, I used to work with two-year-olds, so I have a strong belief about this. You are a product to your society. You are a product to the environment that you are in. When these young kids, you are exposed at a young age, and parents don't understand it. They don't see that. It's nothing that they can see. They think, okay, I had this kid. I pushed out this kid a year ago. I finna go smoke some weed. I finna go drink. I finna go do this. Not knowing that the kid still sees you. The kid sees you. They watches you. They watch everything around you. So at these very young age, these kids build up these ways. And they, as they're older, they become a certain way. And I feel like that's because they became a product of their society, which is so unfair. It's so unfair to these kids because it's like, you're so exposed, just like me. At the age of two, I had to sit here, and it's like, I used to ask my mom, because my mom didn't want to reveal to me like that my dad was in prison and stuff like that when I was a kid. It took her to the age of seven took me to the age of seven to tell me that my dad was in prison. So like I could remember these firm memories of, okay, something bad happened and my stepdad is not my real dad. Like I could feel that feeling like this is not my real dad. So where's my real dad? And on my seventh birthday, I remember asking her like, you know, my dad, like I just kept saying my dad and I remember crying. I asked her like, could you tell me who my dad is? She told me who my dad is. Let me go see him and things. But that was the beginning of me being a product of society. The fact that she lied to me, you know, it could be like, I could build a thing of lying now, or just in these different characters or these different mannerisms that I could pick up, or these different traits that I could pick up that because I was exposed to it at a young age, or because I was taught it, or because I saw it at that young age, now I'm developing that character or those traits. So yeah, I just...
You know, parenting is not easy. As the father of three sons, if I would have known, right? Sometimes you don't know. As a parent, and you don't realize just how bright children are at very young ages. And so I came from a family of 13 with a mom and a dad who stayed married 66 years. I'm married to the same woman for 43 years. My sons all grew up in, you know, my home. And so, you know, You don't know. It's difficult. Raising children is not easy. And I think one of the things that we need to do in this society is spend more time educating parents and those prospective parents exactly what it is to raise a human being, how smart children are from birth, and how they're learning every second of every minute that they're alive on this planet. And until we get to a point as a society that we understand that, we're going to continue to have these kinds of issues that we are dealing with so often. And people are going to keep asking these questions, what's wrong with our children? Well, what's wrong with our children is exactly what you guys have said. They're very intelligent. They're very loving. They're very wise. They come into the world with that gift. And so they, depending on their experiences, that's what shapes who they are. And you can shape who they are at very young ages, a lot younger than I think most people understand. Miss Woods.
Yeah,
These young people who we're talking to right now have wisdom beyond their years. I always say that wisdom doesn't always come with age. But if you find wisdom and age together, married together, you've got a jewel. But these young people and the wisdom that they've garnered lead me to believe that they are going to be very, very successful in whatever endeavor they choose in their lives. And what is happening with the Youth Advisory Council and WellPoint is really we need to see more of that. Is it safe to say that?
Oh, yeah. Definitely it's safe to say that. I mean, these young people, they teach me stuff that I don't even know. And I think the biggest key to working with young people is listening. That's all they want to be. They only want to be heard, you know. And when we as adults take that time to just listen to young people, you'll learn a lot. They'll learn to trust. They'll learn to open up. They won't go down the wrong path, you know, because they got that support. But when we stop listening, that's when it becomes a problem. That's when people ask, what's wrong with our children? What's wrong with the young people? Why are they doing things? Have you ever took the time out just to listen to a young person? You know, without interrupting, don't just wait to chime in. Listen, ask them, can I talk now? That's what I had to learn that. It took me a while because I was always thinking that I had all the answers. I don't have all the answers. I came from a two-family parent home as well, four siblings. My parents, if they were both living today, they would still be married for 59 years. So it was all about growing up, seeing things, as Angel said. I watched everything as a young person, what not to do. There's a difference. In my age group, when I was coming up, it was different. You were afraid of your parents. You know, you knew right from wrong what not to do. You know, even though I came from a dysfunctional family home, abuse and everything, I made sure that's why I got into this field. I don't have any kids, but I got like 30 kids, if that makes sense. Because these young people I work with, they're like my own. They are my own. They are my family. And when they do wrong, I make sure to let them know they did wrong. I don't just sugarcoat it, you know, because if you put just Band-Aids on things, then they're never going to heal.
So Ms. Woods, I mean, excuse me, Angel, you are as bright a 20-year-old star as I've seen. You are going to do extraordinary things in your future. But you're at some point in time maybe eventually going to become a mother. What have you learned? Let's say tomorrow Angel becomes a mother. I'm not wishing that on you. But if you could see into the future, what would you see and what's important in rearing your child?
Just being an auntie feels like a mother. I just became an auntie like a year ago. And like, when I think about her, I think about like me having kids potentially one day. I think about the things that I watch other people do in my family that I just think like I can't do. Like, just morally, like, just people not taking up for their kids when their kids need it the most. Like, and I'm not saying, you know your child doing bad, don't support the bad behavior. When your kid, like, I play sports. I never had nobody at a sports game I played at. So as a mother, I will be at every game that my child wants me to be at. As a mother, if my child tells me one thing or tells me someone did something to them, I'm going to protect that child by any means necessary. I'm going to teach my child right from wrong. You know right from wrong. So if you're in the streets, you're 16, 17, and you decide that you want to be in the streets, and you get caught up in the streets, that that's where you get caught up at. I can't save you. I'm going to teach my child the difference to know, like, this is the set of people you should be around, and this is the set of people you shouldn't be around, because I was that person. I chose a bad crowd at a point in time because it felt good to me. It felt like, okay, this is taking away some pain, but in reality, it did nothing but drain. So that's another thing that I would teach my child, and I will also teach my child to always keep the strength and resilience, to just know to keep going.
Deontay, you are 16 years old. You are right there. Young people, unfortunately, your age, stealing cars, out 2-3 o'clock in the morning, not going to school, shooting, being shot, taking life, losing their lives. If you had a chance to talk to some of those young brothers, what would you say to them?
I would say, look, if you want to be out here in these shoes, it's fine. But you have to know that people before you, your ancestors, have fought for you to live a free and happy life. Why would you go outside and risk all of that? Freedom is a valuable thing. And a home is a valuable thing. So after you get done with the day, you don't go hang out in the streets. You go home to that warm bed, that home cooked meal. You go home to family. You go home to somewhere you can be comfortable at. I would tell these kids, find you somewhere you can be comfortable at without having to go off the rails, to go outside looking for trouble. Because trouble brings pain. And I don't like pain. Pain doesn't feel good, even if people say this. Pain does not feel good. So I would tell them to find them a hobby. Hang out with people that make you feel good, that loves you and that supports you. Don't support the bad things that you're doing. I would tell them that, hey, maybe go find a sport to do with your friends. I feel like kids nowadays, they need something to keep them occupied. And for the kids that are still in cars, well, I feel like if these kids are still in cars, that's obviously a ring of a bell that they want to learn how to drive. Get them into classes. Tell them to go find you a class or help them get into a class so they can learn how to drive instead of getting into these reckless accidents.
So, Johnny, you being the oldest of the group and having gone through Rogers Memorial and clearly dealing with some psychological issues. Nobody could tell that by the way you carry yourself and the conversations and the way you speak. What would you say to young people and to people who say, well, you shouldn't go seek out support from if there's something going on with you and the importance of seeking out support and help from someone professional to kind of get you back on track?
I would tell them, well, I would definitely say, like, you know, you should go seek support, and you should not be afraid of the need to get help, whether that's psychological, like financial, or in any way, really, because there are resources for everyone who's going through something. And, you know, it's not a bad thing to ask for help, because the reason you need help is because, you know, someone left you in a position where you're in need of help, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, or hurt you in some way, where now, like, you have to make that choice of, like, do I let myself keep suffering, or do I, you know, say my truth and get the needs met that need to be met right now? And also, it's like within like the Black community, there's so much like, what's the word, like, yeah, it's like the stigma of, like, you know, not being able to go get mental health support because that means that you're, like, crazy.
Right.
But with so much that I've learned, trauma can manifest in different ways. It can become depression, it can become anxiety, it can be PTSD. There's so many things that, like, are going on with, like, just the human mind
and then like experiences you experience in life, that like it is not a bad thing to ask for help and get the help, and then acknowledging it for what it is and not like just being ignorant to like the symptoms that you kind of face day to day. Like, you know, people also need to like just be more educated on like those topics of like mental health, like, and have more trauma-informed care knowledge, just as like as people, because the more that you educate yourself on topics like this, the less room there is to misinterpret what someone is going through and what, you know, what is truly happening to somebody or a situation. You know what I'm saying?
You know, guys, if I didn't know any better, if I could not see and did not hear in the beginning your names and who you were and your backgrounds, I think I'm talking to psychiatrists and psychologists. You are very well versed and have certainly listened and learned about the conditions of your life and not to give in, not to give up. And that's why you're all going to be so very successful. And the fact that we're going to do this again and again, because there's so much to cover, we can't get it all in the first go round. We'll get into what you guys want to do in the future and all those things, but we're going to have to leave it there for now. I want to thank you guys from the depth of my heart. This podcast will be going across the entire state of Wisconsin and the nation. Because as you guys stated, one of the things that you really want to do is your own podcast series. We're going to work to do all that we can at Civic Media to make that a reality. And so Miss Woods, thank you, for the great work. I want to thank, WellPoint and Reggie Newsom, the new CEO, and all the people at WellPoint who make this possible. We'll certainly catch up again with part two of this in the next week or so. So thank all of you. Have a great holiday, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Mr. Earl.
All right.